Podcasting from the megacity metropolis of Toronto, you are now entering the Cave of Solitude. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and I am joined by my very good friend and everybody's favorite host, the star of the show,
Daphne J.
Welcome back, Daphne J. How's it going?
It's going.
Are you excited to return to the world of Star Wars this evening as we cap off our coverage of the original trilogy?
Yes.
So this is it, folks. The last of the Star Wars coverage episodes before The Force Awakens.
Let's do this.
So we've been building up for this one, talking about the last couple of movies. Return of the Jedi. Let's get right into it. Let's not waste any time. So this was released May 25th, 1983. I think, if I am not mistaken, this was exactly 6 years from the time that Star Wars A New Hope was released. What were your initial thoughts of this movie, Daph J? Your earliest memories of Return of the Jedi?
Ewoks.
Ewoks?
Mm-hmm.
Really? How old were you when you first saw this movie?
I don't know. Young.
So is that why the Ewoks stood out to you? Because
probably.
You were young and...
Yeah.
And so that was like the appeal. It was like, so did you find
lightsabers and Ewoks were my thing.
So did you have any when you saw Return of the Jedi? Now hopefully the people listening have watched all these three movies, have also listened to the previous episodes, so there's no spoilers. Mm-hmm. If this is going to be spoiler filled. So if you haven't watched this, shame on you. But did you see the previous movies before Return of the Jedi? Because for myself, this was my earliest images of what Star Wars was. Scenes from this movie.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't know. I would want to say yes, because mm-hmm. I had an older sibling who was already introduced to this amazement of...
This universe.
So... I want to say that I already had some kind of background knowledge, if you will.
So you weren't disconnected, like there was a context?
No.
Okay, got it. Myself as well, this was my first memory of Star Wars, like I said, but I always, for some reason, associated Star Wars with C-3PO.
Mm.
I'm not sure why that image of the, maybe it was the golden robot with this little... beeping guy beside him that stood out to me, and I remember scenes from this movie, but like you said, the lightsabers.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, the pinnacle of this movie is probably that lightsaber duel between Vader and Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment when the mask is taken off of Vader for the first time, you get to see his face. But before we get into all of that, what were your memories of this film? Where does it rank for you amongst the Star Wars original trilogy?
I guess it was my favorite of the three at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, the teddy bears and, the dancing and the fun of, like, swinging from tree to tree. Like, it was appealing to me.
Okay.
Having a different appreciation for the trilogy, as mentioned in the previous episode, my favorite of the trilogy is the second one.
The Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
Okay. So, as we've done with all of these movies, before we get going in describing all the things we loved and hated and all that jazz, let's give a quick synopsis of what the plot was here. Do you want to read it this time? Put you on the spot.
Okay.
This is from Wikipedia, everybody. That's our source for this. So if we're wrong,
yeah, and if anyone recommends a better source, please let us know, because we know Wikipedia can just like insert and excerpt things.
It's true.
Anyway, the evil Galactic Empire, under the direction of the ruthless Emperor, is constructing a second Death Star in order to crush the Rebel Alliance. The Rebel Alliance, once and for all. Since Emperor Palpatine plans to personally oversee the final stages of its construction, the Rebel fleet launches a full-scale attack on the Death Star in order to prevent its completion and kill Palpatine. effectively bringing an end to the Emperor's hold over the galaxy. Meanwhile, Luke Skywalker, a Jedi apprentice, struggles to bring Darth Vader, whom he finds out is actually his father Anakin, and a fallen Jedi, back from the dark side of the Force.
Now I feel like watching it. That was good.
Yeah?
Did a good job? Yeah,
that was good. You think I could be like one of those audio book readers?
Maybe.
I didn't even practice that. That was off, like, I was nervous.
Was off the top. Yeah, that was good. You were getting recorded and everything.
I slipped a little bit, but I think I did pretty good.
No, and you even started to do the, you had a little bit of a voice in you. Mm-hmm. And you did the Rebel Alliance. You should have read the whole thing like that. That would have been good. Okay, so, that's the synopsis. This is the ultimate battle coming to a conclusion between the Rebel fleet and the Empire. The last film... The Empire pretty much got a victory mm-hmm. over them. Took Han Solo, broke up the team in a way, kind of left them all reeling. Luke realized something frightening about who his father actually was and really gave him like a crisis of conscience of what he would have to choose, realizing how close he is to the dark side, not knowing all of this stuff. So it leaves you really in limbo.
Mm-hmm.
Me and you have discussed this, that, and I've said this to some friends, that The Empire Strikes Back had to have been one of the biggest paradigm shifts in movies, and how it left you waiting for the next film to be a direct continuation of a story that left everyone shocked
mm-hmm.
at the end of it, right? So now you got this, finally, people have been waiting 3 years to see if Darth Vader is actually his dad and all that kind of stuff. So the screenplay was done by the same gentleman who did Empire Strikes Back, Lawrence Kasdan, who was also the one who wrote Force Awakens. So people are really happy about that.
Yeah.
George Lucas did not direct it.
Thank God.
He did the screenplay and the stories is his, which right. I think he's a great story person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's directed by Richard Marquand, who I don't think had any previous sort of criteria that would have made him an obvious choice for this movie, and I don't recognize his name for anything he did afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So this is probably his biggest film that he ever did, and it did well for that time. It did $572 million in the box office with a budget of about $40 million. That's big money that it did. That's huge. I didn't get to see it in the theater. Safe to say, you're younger than me, so you didn't either. So you go back into what it was that you liked about it. Tell me your feelings towards this movie. You said the Ewoks, but now, however many years later it is, where do you stand on it now?
I still enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I think it's great to have seen the character development in all of them, and Luke is so BA. Like... Mm-hmm. His outfit, like, he means business.
Yeah.
So when he's first introduced in this film, he has the cloak, he has the hood, he's wearing all black, and he's like, you're gonna do this because I'm telling you to. And then this weak-minded, long, twisted...
I forgot what that guy's name is.
Yeah. Anyway.
Jabba servant.
Yeah, that guy falls for it. And things are going
weak-minded.
The way they're going. But you got an idea of the type of power and respect and growth that Luke has done from the initial wimpy, I don't want to go away, I don't want to be on a farm anymore, to like, you know, this, I'm here to accomplish this task.
Yeah.
And everything was...
Disciplined.
Executed.
Yeah.
Right? And in the middle, it was kind of like, we want to do this, but we're not sure. Oh, we're stuck in the trash compactor kind of thing. Or,
right.
Fly
by the seat of your pants.
Right, but now thing. It's like, yeah. So, that was cool. I like the fact that people grew a little bit.
Yeah, no, you definitely saw.
There was a strength.
Yeah, and when he enters, like you said, when he enters Jabba's palace, there's this authority to him,
mm-hmm.
and you realize... It was. I heard it commented on somewhere, but you realize that there was no way that Jabba was going to win or defeat them, no matter what position that he had put Luke in, throwing him against the that monster that he fights underneath Jabba's underneath Jabba's little throne or his couch that he's sitting on with Princess Leia.
The Rancor.
That's it. Look at you coming up with the Star Wars factoids. So he's up against that ugly Rancor. What would you do with those teeth? How would you fix that problem? So he defeats the Rancor, and you got that big fat guy that's in the pit with them that's all sad about what happened.
What was his name? He had a name too. What I didn't know? I didn't realize that these things
all had
names? These obscure characters had a name.
I think that those names, people learn them after the fact. I don't think in the movie they were credited with names. Mm-hmm. I think when they made trading cards and toys, all of these things were given a name, and that's why they become part of the lore, where people know them.
Okay.
So that they don't come to my mind immediately, but, I mean, the Rancor monster does. And then from that battle, Jabba takes all of them, including Han Solo, who has now been released from the Carbonite because of Princess Leia infiltrating the palace as a bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
She frees Han. And a great moment where you see him, like, that way he acts all cold and the emotion that he's putting behind it, like, is really believable, especially since the effect of being in that carbonite was kind of cheesy. Mm-hmm. He really sells the emotion of how cold he must have been being in there for all those years.
Mm-hmm.
So now Lando is a spy within Jabba's palace, and him, Chewie, and Luke are headed to the Sarlacc pit.
Mm-hmm.
I love that scene. That's one of my when that scene comes up, I realize what an adventure we're on. I think it's one of my favorite battles in all of the movies, of the entire Star Wars movie pantheon. When they go to that Sarlacc pit and Boba Fett is there, and R2-D2 throws Luke his lightsaber for the first time that you see that he's rebuilt. Like, I just think it's awesome. How about yourself? What do you remember about the opening act of Return of the Jedi?
I just remember the band.
Yeah.
And it had such a jig to it.
Yeah.
I did not appreciate when, I guess, they redid it and they added more to it.
Yeah,
that in the first? I don't know if I'm confusing them.
No, I think you're right. I
feel like the band was altered at some point.
Hey, you know how the song went? How'd the song go? And how about the little...
Yeah, that jig.
The monster that you like? You said was your favorite creature.
He's my favorite obscure character in all Star Wars trilogy.
Do you know what his name is?
I absolutely don't know what his name is.
Salacious Crumb.
No way.
Yeah, he's got a name. Can you do his laugh?
You know what? He looks like a crumb.
Yeah.
He looks exactly like... He was. I always liked him as a kid, and I loved the way he would laugh. Like there was a part in the movie where he was laughing so hard he couldn't laugh anymore, and I could relate because I would laugh so hard that I was out of breath. But you're laughing, so I'm like, oh my goodness, this Muppet is the best thing ever.
Can you do his laugh?
Which one? The like when he's really losing his mind, just or his when he's out one. Of breath?
Just his typical one.
Of course I can't
do it.
No, I can't.
Oh, you can't.
No, I can't. You can.
Let me see. Can I channel my inner Salacious Crumb? No, I can't. I can't just do it off the cuff. I'd have to laugh at something and maybe it would come out of me.
It's great, though.
But that, in a little bit of trivia, that thing, when it was being filmed on top of C-3PO when he's tearing out his eye,
mm-hmm.
Anthony Daniels actually had a panic attack.
Right.
During that whole scene.
I remember
hearing
that.
And he was
that.
Like screaming, get me out, I can't do this.
Yeah.
So that thing, even though it was this little Muppet, as you put it, mm-hmm.
That's the one.
Probably drove him nuts. Like, it was, I don't know if he heard that while they're filming it, but apparently it gave him panic attacks being in that metal suit and having this thing poking and prodding at him. So a little bit of
Salacious Crumb. That he just got so much. He's like even more my favorite because of his name.
Yeah.
That's great. I've never thought to look up his name because, like I said, I didn't realize that these other characters actually had titles or names. Like, yeah. I just thought, like, that the rat next to Jabba the Hutt, you know, the keeper that, you know, took care of the monster, the pig guard. Like, you know, you gave them what you saw, what they were, but I didn't realize that they were that
important. The other guy that you mentioned who Luke tricks when he comes into the temple, Bib Fortuna, that's his name.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, moving on to, again, the Sarlacc pit. Favorite part of that battle scene? Which one, was there something that made you laugh? Was there something that you just thought Luke was, oh man, he's so awesome when he does this? Or, I really like Harrison Ford in that scene where he's slowly
regaining his eyesight.
Yeah, and there's that little exchange when they're heading there. And he's like, when Luke says to him, he goes, I grew up here, you know. And then Han Solo's like, you're going to die here, you know. Convenient. The moments like that were always like, I don't know, that little bit of humor and that.
It was subtle humor.
Yeah, it was subtle humor, but it made the characters feel like they really knew each other. Mm-hmm. I like those parts. But when he finally gets that lightsaber in his hand and starts just taking everybody
you,
out.
I'm telling you, R2-D2's the real hero, though.
Yeah.
Because the whole time, he was serving, because now they were Jabba's droids.
Right.
So, R2 was serving drinks in the bar. But he knew what was going on, because when Jabba had them captive, ready to send them down the plant.
Right.
Death.
The Sarlacc pit.
R2 was like, you've been coming, and he shot that lightsaber out, ready for Luke to grab. R2's bod.
That's your guy.
He's the one.
Do you think BB-8 in the new movie is gonna take over that role of R2? Or can anybody ever take that role over?
I don't know. I hope that character honors and is an homage to R2-D2. Like, I the only reason BB-8 is a character in this film is because of what R2-D2 was able to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he kind of set the path for him. So, pass on the mantle, fine, but there, for me, there's no one better than R2. So.
Okay. Well, I don't know for sure, but I'm willing to bet that he's not going to have a Jar Jar voice attached to his machinery. So that's already in the plus column. So some other stuff. What are some other things about this movie that you enjoyed or that you have fond memories of?
I feel like I'm missing a lot, but I also really liked the vehicles that the stormtroopers would use when they were on the Ewok planet.
Endor, yes.
So that was always really cool. I feel like I remember the toy, or at least I remember the commercials of the toys being promoted. I don't know, or maybe I dreamt it, but I feel like I remember seeing commercials of those toys being promoted, of the speeder bike things.
Really? When do you remember that?
I don't know. Like, I feel like I can envision a white background and things happening. Kind of like I remember the Batman toys and the blocks and, you know, when Batman would shoot something, it would fall on the Joker. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you just have these
visions.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like I've seen it before. Anyway, I like those. I like how quick they take off and the noise that they would make and how although it was like heavy machinery, like it was very like
they moved
yeah. so swift and yeah. so clean.
I love that scene. It's one of those things where sometimes you become so fond of Empire Strikes Back and you always think like that's the high watermark for the movies. That when I watch Return of the Jedi, I always think like, oh, this is the one with the teddy bears. Mm. But then when I watch it, I'm like, wait a second, this has got the Sarlacc pit. This has got the speeder bike race. This has got even the conversations that Luke has with different characters throughout the movie to kind of give it that weight of what's about to happen when he talks to Yoda for the last time, when he returns back to Dagobah,
mm-hmm.
and he talks to Leia. And you know throughout the movie that, before I jump ahead, it's this movie where you realize that the other person who has the ability to either make or break the Rebel Alliance is Leia,
mm-hmm.
who's his sister, his twin sister. I don't think, I just read recently that that wasn't originally going to be part of the storyline.
Them being siblings.
Well, him and Leia being siblings was not going to be part of the story. I just read that it was originally George Lucas's plan to tell the story or continue the story where Luke is trying to find his sister later on. But he didn't want to, he decided against that ultimately and said he wanted to tie up everything in this movie, all the loose ends. So that's how he made Leia the sister, which I don't know for you. It doesn't take away from me knowing that it was kind of up in the air because I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you see now why there was that...
kissing scene?
Those weird scenes that everyone's like, ew, it's so gross. But I guess they didn't know.
Yeah.
Right? So, and then So along with that, when he reveals to Leia that they are family and that Vader's their father, to him confronting Vader, like all those scenes, I there's a lot of stuff in this movie that, that has some good weight to it, good story.
I mean, this is gonna sound pretty girly, but I also like this movie because it was the first time I saw Leia with her hair down.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, her hair is so pretty. Yeah. And she actually looks like a princess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time we've met her, she was always like at war.
Yeah.
It was never like the ideal princess role. She was always in the middle of some kind of battle or.
And apparently she complained about that, actually, that her costumes in the other movies didn't really accentuate the fact that she was a woman. She was always, like, in some robe. And then she had, like, on the Hoth.
Well,
like,
they made up for it in this one. She was half naked.
Yeah, and it became, like, a running joke that, okay, you were upset with those previous costumes. We'll show that you're a woman. You're in this thing where now people still fantasize about Leia in the bikini in Jabba's palace, right? So what a contrast that turned out to be. I like that you see where, like, Lando Calrissian returns.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a major part now of the Rebel Alliance. That's cool. Do you think he'll show up in the new movies, Force Awakens, or the subsequent sequels to that? Would you want him to? Do you like his character enough?
Would I want him to? Do I like his character? With him, Lando's is different because I felt a betrayal on his part when he gave Vader.
Made the deal
with Vader. But then at the same time, like, oh, he did it because he actually was trying to save them in a way. It was a very complicated relationship. And then it was even so for them. Like, they could, when he turned on the bad guys to get them free, like, Chewie and Leia were both good. They were both chewing him out because he had given Han up to the, oh my goodness.
Boba Fett.
Yeah, Boba Fett and Darth Vader and... But he's like, you know, I'm trying to help you. So I feel like his reclaiming this role wasn't exactly explained. He was kind of just there.
Do you know what I mean? I think at the end of Empire, they split up and it shows him and Chewie going to, they say, we'll meet you in Tatooine. So you kind of knew he was going to be there, but...
But, like, you know what? Like, but that is a very heavy betrayal to not really be addressed. Although, maybe they just didn't have time to. Or, I don't know. Maybe he did him a solid by going back to go get Luke. But even then, there was, like, conflict, right? He's like, are you kidding me? We're going to go back to where we just came from? There's no way.
And then Chewie
had to, tell him off. So, I like that he's in the story, but I don't know how relevant he would be in the new one. So I don't know if having him there or not would be necessary.
Mm. I think people are feeling so
nostalgic
and feeling that the way everything looks and feels with the new Star Wars coming out that. Yeah, let's put them there. Let's get all of these guys back. Let's see what all of them have been doing and what role they've played in the last 30 years of this imaginary
universe. It'd be nice to know what's happened with him, but like I said, I don't know if I would trust him.
I felt yeah, like, you never see, like, you never get those moments where you see them earn each other's trust.
Yeah,
but exactly. You see it in it when they're at the Sarlacc pit, where he's on there with them on that ship, and he basically saves their lives, or they end up saving his life.
Yeah.
But he's a part of that crew that is there to yeah. save the day, right?
Right.
So
right.
seeing him and Han now on good terms, and he's a general. That little exchange they have about the Falcon,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that was cool.
Yeah.
It kind of shows their friendship of years past, of like, you know, take care of her. I have your word, right?
Yeah.
I love those scenes.
Yeah.
The one complaint that everyone always has with this film, or criticism, Ewoks. How do you feel about them? Because you know why? I get why he did it. Like, people take this stuff so seriously. Like, so much to the point that they have podcasts where they have to go through each movie and discuss them. Like, I don't know what's wrong with those people. But I mean, it would have made sense from a perspective of who's already been introduced and how you would be able to defeat stormtroopers, that it would be Wookiees, right? You know that they're strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they, granted, they don't speak any language that is understood, but neither do Ewoks.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing about an Ewok is that they're cuter, I guess you can say, right? They're little, and they have this little teddy bear appeal to them. But it would have been awesome to see, like, a planet of Ewoks, or Wookiees, pardon me, with their, what's the thing that Chewie uses? His weapon.
That boomer.
It was like a harpoon type of laser.
Yeah.
It would have been cool to see all of them with that type of thing.
This is my argument to those that like to argue. I think with the whole Star Wars trilogy, there is an underlying message. Okay, there is a good and an evil. But I think the nice thing, if we want to get deep about it, the fact that they were Ewoks, they're small and an inferior race.
Indigenous too, right?
Right. So, but, yeah, they had little stones and little pebbles that brought down these big machinery type of things. I'm assuming that that's the argument. Like, how did they bring down...
Yeah, these guys in helmets all get taken down by rocks.
But I think the point... What helps me accept this... First of all, it's a story.
Like, yeah.
Let's just enjoy it. Sit back and enjoy the ride.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
if we want to get deep about it, I think the underlying message is that no matter how insignificant or small we may feel, it's what's inside. If we have a real desire to make a difference, we can.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter our size. It doesn't matter if we fit in. It doesn't matter if we don't have the
technology?
Is it when you have money?
Oh, you're not affluent, or you don't have like the means.
The means, like, just be, you know what I mean? Like, you just might be not the best. You might not be in the best circumstances.
Blue collar.
But the fact of, you know, uniting yourself with those and having an understanding and a mutual goal, you can accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that
you take what you've got and you make the most of it. Because that's
right.
what I see in their battle. Like,
right.
the way they defeat them is, this is what we've got. With what we've got, can we do it? Yes, we have the willpower
right.
to do
exactly.
it. And the like you said, that desire. Because they really wanted to help their new friends
mm-hmm.
and their C-3PO god.
And yeah.
That was
full
hilarious.
And I think, too, like, they realized in this world, in this galaxy, had they not stood up to fight, as small and as insignificant as they were, they would have been victimized just as much as everybody else. So what else were they just going to sit there and take it? And might as well fight, because there was a reason to. There was a cause.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to do that as a united front. So I think that's what I think. It doesn't matter how small you are. You could do what you want.
I like it. So you have no problem with the Ewoks.
No.
Would you have preferred Wookiees?
I mean, I've never heard that, because I've always taken stuff for face value.
Right.
So
right.
I've seen Wookiees. I mean, I've seen the Ewoks. That's all I've ever known. And that's it's never occurred to me to have another race or another, I don't know what they are, other animals or other whatever to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it absolutely does make sense. It does make sense, and I guess they're known for fighting. Mm-hmm. They're fighters.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I think it could have been very obvious to use Wookiees.
And I don't think it would have had as much of an appeal to children, ultimately.
Well,
because and what you were saying before, I think you're right about the message of a simple farm boy can help save the universe, right? He's the one who is just a farm boy in a nondescript planet,
mm-hmm.
can get his thing together, and now he's on this wonderful adventure where he saves everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have these two droids that, you know, are the linchpin of how all this gets started, and you would be like, wait, one just beeps, the other one is is a protocol droid, but they're right in the center of this wonderful adventure. You've got this ship that is always referred to as a piece of junk, but it has the will, mm-hmm. right, the guts to do it. So I think you're right, it is the theme. All of these underdogs,
right,
are saving the day, are coming through. But the other thing as well that is very well documented is that George Lucas wanted to make a story to appeal to a young audience.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars was always meant to.
Well, I think as a businessman, it is smart.
Yes.
And that's the other thing, too. And for marketing and advertising, that is brilliant.
I think they even had some cartoons afterwards with Ewoks and the droids.
I think you're right, yeah.
I remember that vaguely. Yeah. So I think all of that was very well calculated on his part, mm-hmm. to include that. But like you said, let some things go. Your suspension of disbelief has got to be there. Yeah, you know what? The stormtroopers were useless from the beginning. So these little bears have the will to they can hit something.
Yeah.
Their slingshots actually hit something. It's like David and Goliath tale, right? That was awesome.
Remember when they unleashed these tree logs?
Yeah.
And then they just crushed the head of those things have to have a name. But
yeah.
Those tall box walker things.
Yeah.
You know, they took them or they ran a rope, I guess, around the legs.
Yeah.
Or no, was that in the second? No, that's in the second one.
They used the rope to trip it.
But yeah, exactly. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you have the power and you have the means to do all this evil stuff. But when there's a united front, anything can happen.
Yeah.
So I thought that was, anyway, that's my spiel.
How did you feel in this movie? It's the first time you see the Emperor. His actual physical presence. What were your... I hate that guy. Not because he's the bad guy, but even in, like, the original trilogies, maybe
mm-hmm.
he's that good of an actor to make you... Like, when he's even playing Senator Palpatine, I just want to go through the screen and choke him.
Yeah,
I can't stand him.
Yeah.
But you got to admit, like, he really makes you feel that hate.
Yeah.
And that's a good performance on his part when you think of it in those terms. What did you think of the Emperor as a kid, your first time watching it?
He would not necessarily scare me.
Oh, he scared me.
But
Lord Vader.
See that right there? I despised him.
Yeah.
I did despise him. And I did not like seeing his mouth. I didn't like seeing anything about him.
Yeah.
Just sitting there
with his face all wrinkled.
Yeah, it wasn't fun for me.
Yeah.
I didn't like
terrifying.
Him.
Mm-hmm. I was terrified as a kid. That whole scene, though, with him on the newly constructed, half-finished Death Star, when they finally bring Luke, when Vader finally brings Luke to his master to turn him to the dark
side. Well, Luke voluntarily goes to, because he wants to turn him to
the light.
The light. But mm-hmm. he's like, well, take me to him if you want. Kind of thing. Yeah. Anyway, go on.
No, that I was just going to say that scene of him talking to Luke and trying to really penetrate through his soul to get the hate out of him.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I'm
when he's like, I feel your anger.
Yeah. And then
it was like a turn on to him. I hated it.
Yeah, you're right. He was like soaking it in, right? Man, that was powerful when you see him and he's showing Luke that, you don't think I know what you guys have planned? Like, this is all, it's all falling into my master plan. Mm-hmm. And you got General Akbar, the guy on with the rebels, and they finally come out of light speed and they realize
the one that looks like a squid.
Yeah. The one they see that they've been all. What did you remember? What he says?
It's a trap.
It's a trap. Everybody loves that line. And so you see them come into this trap, and you see Palpatine just trying to really penetrate to Luke and get to his core hatred. Mm-hmm. And now they've realized that he has someone he loves in Leia, right? His sister. And they really start to play on that point. I love seeing Mark Hamill, you know, he doesn't get sometimes enough credit for his acting, because he's known more for, like, his voice acting, and then even in the original Star Wars movie, he's that whiny kind of kid. Mm-hmm. But there's some things he doesn't say, or times where you just see him express emotion, mm-hmm. that says so much. Mm-hmm. So seeing him in that moment really...
I found his... going along with what you're saying, I found that his most powerful performances when he displayed composure.
Yeah.
When there wasn't much to convey.
Yeah.
There was so much to convey, but he was like keeping his cool. And it's very hard, I think, to do that, because when you are an emotional person or you have something that you really want to say or you're feeling something, you get passionate. Mm-hmm. But he did it in such a demeanor in which you kind of like, wow, he dealt with that pretty good.
Yeah. And along those lines, I know you mentioned...
Or like pleading with his father. It wasn't like he was begging him.
Yeah.
He was just like, let me help you. Like, yeah, it was very honest. I can see that
there is good in you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very like positive, that positive reinforcement that he... And it's not overly emotional.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned how... these characters, like Luke, had all, you really see his power and his desire to not want to turn. Mm-hmm. Originally, Mark Hamill had said that he had asked George Lucas to make him turn, mm-hmm. to the dark side, mm-hmm. to overthrow, and for the original squad to end up having to go after him to win the day, because he was able to be turned as well, which I thought was interesting. I don't know how that would have gone. I think George Lucas was smart enough to say, like, I'm not turning my hero into this villain. Something that maybe would happen today in movies. But even Han Solo, Harrison Ford, was basically pleading to be killed off in Return of the Jedi, to sacrifice his life for his friends, mm-hmm. as it were. Well, if that had been the case back then, what would you have thought were those two different pathways? Do you think either of them would have been an interesting story, or do you like the way it turned out?
Again, I take things for face value, so I like the way it is. Mm-hmm. Because I think, too, it opens up the road to storytelling.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I guess going forward from this point on, the canons aren't going to exist anymore. But they have been able to be there, like, with Leia and Han having children together, and yeah. them having being Jedis. Like, stories were able to develop because of the route that it took originally.
Right.
I don't know how that would have happened if Han Solo would have been killed off.
Yeah.
I think between the two, I probably would have been interested in knowing if Luke would have turned to the dark side. I mean, that's
close.
That's an interesting, like, an interesting take.
Like, he gets really close to it,
on
though,
that
right?
character, especially because that was everyone's fear. Even Uncle Owen's, his mate, he was a douche. Like, he was so rude and inconsiderate. And more, I guess, in the book. I don't remember if he was that mean in the movie. I don't remember. But in the book, of Star Wars, he was just very cold, very to the point, didn't have no nonsense.
Yeah, he couldn't tolerate like Luke's desire.
Yeah, but you
come
to... It was
in the movie too, you see that.
You do.
Cuts him off.
But a little bit more in the book, I think. Anyway, but you then understand that his his reason for being like that cold with Luke and cutting him off was because of his fear of becoming
like his father.
Like his father.
And you really see how close they get, right? That's what's awesome in that last scene on the Death Star, where they mention Leia, and that's what makes him snap, mm-hmm. to the point where Vader, it's not even like Vader's defending himself. He knew that that's what would make Luke react. So when he takes the saber and is ready to strike, Vader's already there to intercept that. Right. And they're really
But even when he did fight Vader, remember, he was like really going at him. Like, and Vader like fell to his knees, and that's when he took his hand off, right? And, the saber got lost. But he was really going at it. Like, he wasn't going to stop. So that would have been an interesting turn had they gone that way, because it was a real possibility.
Do you think Vader turned because he realized that, you know what, this Emperor is going to just let me get killed? So it's not even that if we take, like, there's that rule of two, mm-hmm. in the Sith where you have to have a master and an apprentice. Mm-hmm. So do you think that Vader, and of course, this is all just hypothetical.
Right.
Do you think he turned because there was actual good in him, and he felt that thing for his son, that emotion, that love, the light came out of him? Or was it just like, you know what, this guy's just going to kill me anyways and take
my son? I want to say it was because of the love of his son. Because when Palpatine, or when the Emperor was striking Luke with that electrical dark side force, whatever, and he was frying him to death, Luke was pleading to Darth Vader to help him. He was like, Father, please. And there was a scene or a part in the movie where you actually see Darth Vader look at him, look at Luke, look at the Emperor. At least that's what I suspect. You see the conflict within Vader himself. And he's like, I'm seeing my son suffering. This guy is killing him, and when he's done killing him, he's probably going to kill me. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. he probably felt, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. And so, for the sake of his son, picked up the Emperor and threw him over the cliff.
Do you think that Luke would have turned to the dark side if the Emperor didn't laugh hysterically as he was about to kill Vader? When he sees him turning, right? When he sees Luke giving in to that emotion, that anger, that hatred, he starts laughing of almost joy to be like, I'm winning again. Do you think that's what makes Luke snap out of it? To be like, I'm not going to let this guy win. Or do you think he was in control that whole time?
I think there were moments of weaknesses, but I think what prevailed was the love of father and son. That's what Luke was determined to go there and get his father to turn to the light. And Vader was determined to keep his son and save him from dying at the hands of this enemy. So I think what helped them surpass this
conflict
was that their love for each other, yeah. which...
Ideally, that's what you want it to be, right?
Yeah, and I think that's what it was. Yeah. Because at the end of it, it's not like, all right, you see you later.
Yeah,
he was like, I want to see you with my own eyes. And then Luke, and it's funny because it's not like they ever really had a relationship. They've only ever met as enemies, but they parted as a loving family.
Yeah, tell your sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gives her that message.
Yeah.
That's nice. It's, you know, those I think are the moments like those in such a high adventure, somewhat silly thing like space stories can be.
Mm-hmm.
It's moments like that that really appeal, I think, and gives it that enduring life,
mm-hmm.
to make it carry on from generation to generation, along with all of the fun stuff, the ships and the runaways and the escapes and that type of stuff. But it's those human moments that really bring the story, the core of it, I think. And mm-hmm. and I like that point you made of how they ended. They started as enemies, but they ended as a family, mm-hmm. where they inspired one another. did you know, as a little factoid, that the original title of Return of the Jedi was Revenge of the Jedi?
Yes.
And they had actually released a teaser trailer and posters out that had all of that. And then they changed it after.
Last minute.
Yeah. Because Lucas said that the Jedi misrepresents the Jedi because they wouldn't act out of revenge. Mm-hmm. So I have to change the title.
Mm-hmm.
But then they used that title for Revenge of the Sith. Because it'd be more appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up selling those posters to people in the fan club for like $10 back then. Which is a pretty penny,
mm-hmm.
I would say, to get a poster. But I wonder how hard it is to find one of those now. A revenge of it. Would you want one? Just to say that this is real vintage. This is authentic.
I think it'd be cool to have. I mean, anything like that would be fun to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. But when you hear the explanation as to why it was changed, then it's like, well, I think I just want to keep it pure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's like a purity in that, the title and the story and the representation of that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
But it's cool to be like, this is like one of a kind. It's only like however many in the world.
This is discontinued.
And I have one of them.
Yeah, that's cool. You said your favorite obscure character in the entire trilogy, or even the prequels for that matter, was Salacious Crumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know who mine is? Do you remember who I told you it was?
Oh, my goodness.
His name?
Oh, he is the fighter that fights with everybody.
I don't know who you're talking about.
He's the fighter and he has big lips.
He's Lando's co-pilot.
Yes.
You know what his name is? Nyenyub. And he speaks a Kenyan dialect called Heya. That's what his language was based off of. And you know, he was actually, wasn't an actor in a suit. It was a puppet.
Oh.
They were activating a big puppet like that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Nyenyub. How's that for obscure names? I didn't even know he had a name. Okay, so going back to the ending of this movie, now with the celebration and the funeral pyre of mm-hmm. seeing Vader on that thing, you see in The Force Awakens, somebody has found that helmet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's all kind of melted away and disintegrated.
Distorted.
And you watch now, when you watch the Return of the Jedi and you see that scene, you think all those little touches in the trailer of Force Awakens, even though you don't know what it's about, bring all this emotion to you seeing those little touches. And now I watch Return of the Jedi, seeing that burning of the body.
Mm-hmm.
A little different. Like, somebody went to a lot of trouble
mm-hmm.
to get pieces of those remains.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, what significance does that have?
Yeah.
So I find that interesting. Pet peeves with this movie? Anything that bothers you? Is there that whole thing about a second Death Star? Does that irritate you to know that it's basically the same, the same weapon of the New Hope?
I'm just a little conflicted as to why they would do, like, isn't the definition of stupidity like doing something thing? Expecting a different result, like doing the same thing and expecting a different result. It doesn't exactly.
It's a more powerful space station than the first one, I guess.
It's dumb. Yeah. Like, and then, like, where is the surprise, the element? Like, you're building or doing the same thing that didn't work the first time. Like, don't you learn? So,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, unless they were trying to keep with something that people have an appreciation for, like, there's a nostalgia attached to it.
Guess
for some that like the dark side, like, you know, like, oh, it's a bitter one, it's like James Bond, and he gets like another Rolls Royce but it's like faster and it's like, you know, has a separate compartment, a secret weapon. So it's still familiar, but new and improved.
Right.
So maybe that's
this what one wasn't they were even going. Finished.
Well, yeah, but like, it's
fully operational.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about it.
But you know what was kind of cool about it when I was watching it again is when Vader's ship, the Star Destroyer he's on, collides with the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
You realize how huge and dwarfing this space station is. It's like the size of a moon for real, that this extremely large ship, it crashes into it, and it doesn't even look like it's not even a fraction of the size.
My question is, I just like to know how they build these things in space. It's a great question.
And I'd like to know how they hear explosions in space, because that is scientifically inaccurate. But that's part of the fun, right? One of the biggest pet peeves people have with this movie, especially more so in the regard to it being remastered and touched up.
Yeah. So I was going to say earlier when we were talking about, and maybe you're not going in this direction, but when we were talking about like the things that we liked about this movie, one of my favorite moments is at the very end when you see the Jedi Knights in their hologram come back to see you, say hello moment.
Right.
And you see Anakin as the dad.
Right.
A mature and dying an honorable death. And dying and anyway, being a Jedi along with his comrades.
Right.
But then
the original actor.
Right.
Right.
And then now they did the
Hayden.
Stupid.
You idiot. Hate that guy.
I hate him. I can't.
You hate his portrayal of Anakin.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. We don't hate him.
Well, I don't know him.
We don't know him.
But yeah, I don't like... Anyway, that's my pet peeve now. Back then, though, that was the best.
You like that?
Yeah, and it pulled at the heartstrings, you know? Seeing that proud moment, and then Luke seeing that his dad made it, and that Luke accomplished his goal of getting his dad out of there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And he was the only one that could see that.
Did you like in that same scene how they tied it in with the prequels?
No.
To show all those other places celebrating?
No.
You didn't like that?
No. I don't like the celebratory upgraded scenes.
Do you like that song? Because that's a different song as well. You don't like that song?
No.
Oh,
okay. I'm a purist, I think. It's like, to me, I like original Lay's chips. I don't need the dressing and the ketchup.
Yeah.
I like the original stuff. If it ain't broke, don't fix, I say.
Yeah.
I see why maybe he was excited to use his new toys to make things shiny and new. But I don't think it was necessary. It had it created such a following and had such success. Like, why would you think that it needed to be
tweaked? I think in his mind, it's like, this, I want people, whether they like it or not. And that's the one thing I give my tip of the hat to George Lucas, is that I'm not making these things necessarily because this is what I think everyone's going to love. I want to tell a story that I have in my head, and if people like it, great. So I think even after the fact, when he touches everything up, it's like, well, this is what I really wanted to begin with. So since this is mine, and I created it, I'm going to touch it up.
Yeah, but the only reason it is what it is because of me. So shut your mouth.
Because of Daft J.
Do your thing. Dance, monkey, dance.
But meanwhile, the Star Wars franchise has got us dancing like monkeys. Every time it comes out, people are going to watch the re-releases and buying them on DVDs more than once, like myself. Who knows how many times people are going to go watch The Force Awakens. That's yet to be seen. But amongst the three, or the six, let's say the six.
Nope.
Hold on. Amongst the six Star Wars films that are in existence up to this point, where does Return of the Jedi rank for you?
It's Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, New Hope.
Any reason why you put them in that order? Empire, you've already expressed that that's, you know, everyone's loves Empire Strikes Back. But why do you put the original Star Wars below The Return of the Jedi?
Original Star Wars, like I said, I like it. I just feel like there's not much I like character development. I like seeing the growth of the characters, and that's just an intro of who these people are.
Got it.
But the sequels are the ones that bring the meat.
Isn't that interesting?
Into the story.
How it's usually the other way around with movies. It's like nothing touches the original for most people. And some people feel this way about Star Wars. Like, mm-hmm. the original is the best.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot, it's never in that predictable order
mm-hmm.
of, like, Back to the Future 1, hands down, mm-hmm. is the best one. Rocky 1, hands down.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana Jones Raiders. Some people might say Last Crusade, but you know what I mean? It's always the first one is the best one.
Mm-hmm.
This one, it's everyone's got a different favorite. I think that's a testament to how good all of these movies were for their time.
For yourself?
For myself, I would... Empire is the one that... I think I'm like you. Originally, Return of the Jedi was my favorite. But now I would say Empire, number one, and then New Hope and Return are kind of equal for me. I can't say that I like one
mm-hmm.
more than the other, because there's certain... scenes in Star Wars, I don't like calling it A New Hope, Star Wars, the original, that are just beautifully shot.
Mm-hmm.
As much as you don't get that, you know, some of the screenplay and the dialogue can be a little silly and mm-hmm. Luke can be annoying, but there's certain things in there that you've never seen before that completely take your breath away or make you feel extremely emotional and realize what this story is going to be about,
mm-hmm.
that are amazing. It can't be duplicated. And I don't think any of the other movies duplicate some of the things you see for the first time in the original Star Wars, as great as they are. So that one has to... I could never say that that's my least favorite of the three.
Right.
None
of the prequels made... They're on no scale whatsoever for me. But...
why do you think that is, though? What is it? Because I'm not one of those people who hate the prequels completely. I like them for a lot of things that they have in them. I think there's a lot of cool stuff with Obi-Wan. There's a lot of cool stuff with R2 and 3PO. I don't necessarily like the way that Padme and Anakin... interact. I think that's extremely cheesy and like you often say, gag me with a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
But some of those lightsaber duels are awesome.
You know what? Besides everything else, how I feel about those movies, and this is probably people are going to disagree with me highly, I don't like how over CGI it is.
I don't think anyone disagrees with you on that.
I feel like it doesn't, I don't see it as a story. It just seems like a fabricated fantasy. Although I know this world is a fantasy, it's just, it's so...
Special effects heavy.
It's way too... It's not, I don't like it.
Polished, you're gonna say?
Yeah. And it's not... What I like about the original trilogy is that it seems raw. And I know at that time, that's what they had to deal... Mm-hmm. They had to make do, but there is something about that, I guess the texture of the movie, it was a raw storytelling. And this was, it was in your face. Like you said, with Padme and Anakin, it was in your face.
Mm-hmm.
The Yoda was in your face, like his backwards talking. There's like it was subtle in the originals, but then it was overly done in the prequels. It's like, okay, like he doesn't always talk like that. It's just they made it a thing.
Interesting. Yeah.
So it's
forced. So a lot of stuff is forced.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But
forced. that's a good point. It's very in your face. Very. Force feeding you certain things that, and you know what too, it was an interesting point I heard is that CGI Yoda as much more mobile and emotive as he could be, being like computerized, everyone appreciates the puppeteer version of Yoda from Empire Strikes Back. They feel that that one's so much more. There's an attachment to it. I don't know if it's because it's tangible. You see that it's a physical thing, but it seems more real.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the elements, like you said, it's too computerized. And I think that George Lucas really wanted to play with that new technology that he didn't have available the first time around, and you to know, a degree that overdid it.
I remember actually saying this to my older sibling. When the new ones were coming out, I had mentioned to her, I'm like, you know, I hope that the new movies look like the old movies. Like, I don't want it to be shiny. Like, I hope it's not. I remember that being a, I wouldn't say a concern, but it was something that I vocalized. I'm like, I hope that the machines and whatever it is that they're planning on doing is similar to what we, because it will only make sense if it's the prequel. It was before that time, so what they used would have been older. You know what I mean? It's like before CDs there was tape players, before tape players there was something. So I thought that that was gonna follow the pattern of history
telling. I get what you're saying. So that like the millennium, if they're the Millennium Falcon is in it, the Millennium Falcon will look new, but there will be other ships that are older. They won't have certain things that they have in the later movies, right? Because
when I said that to her, right. That's what I was meaning. Like, I hope it's like it just makes sense if they're telling the story backwards. Before this even happened. Well, there has to be some antique, there has to be some history, there has to be some weight to what they're gonna. That was just
me back then. And I think a lot of people feel that too. Like, the lightsaber duels are completely incredible in those first movies, almost too much. Because in the later movies, it's very like you use two hands, mm-hmm. and it's very heavy. And it seems like in this one, they're like twirling it around and flipping. And it's cool. It is awesome. I can't take that away from it. But I get what you mean.
Yeah.
I get what you mean. And I think ultimately the reason why people have that preference to the original trilogy, because it has to be said, those prequels were not failures. They did great business and people flocked to watch
them. They made money.
They did. So in no way, shape or form were they like, oh, why did they make those movies? They just bled money and it didn't do anything. It did business. But I think the biggest thing it has going against it that the original Star Wars movies didn't, is you knew how the story ended.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, it didn't leave, like, you were like, oh, cool. I didn't know Obi-Wan did that. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
But you know this is how the story ends.
Yeah. He's going to turn out to be a hermit in some place far, far away.
You know Anakin's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And it's all kind of, you're going exactly where you know you're going.
Right.
Whereas the originals, there was surprise. And even though now you know how it ends, you're like, oh, that's amazing. You didn't, like, you know, I have to see the next one because what a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
This one, you knew how the story ended before it started.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's always something that it had going against it. You couldn't, what could you have done to really make it better?
The other thing, too, I didn't like about those movies is it was very political heavy.
Yes.
Like, everything was just politics. And I guess that's an emulation of the real world. Like, that's.
But it took, like, you're like, you didn't know why, what's the problem here?
But that's the other thing. It's like, huh? But I guess, again, real world. I don't know what's going on. When they talk about senator this and governor that and the polls, and I'm like, I don't know what none of this means.
The caucuses.
Yeah. And I don't care. But I also don't care because I don't understand it. And it's not like they made it understandable anyway, unless I'm just behind on understanding. But it just sounded like a mess.
Well, the first Phantom Menace, episode 1, when they have the roll up, it was the Trade Federation is fighting over taxing, and it's like, what? What's happening?
Yeah.
Whereas when you watch, by the time you get to Revenge of the Sith, it's already starting to feel a little bit more like the original trilogy. The first thing on the roll-up on Revenge of the Sith is war, right? So you're like, okay, we're fighting. There's conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I know where I kind of stand. But you didn't really know, why are they here?
Yeah.
What's the reason for this?
Yeah. It's more if they were frowning. It's like, oh, okay, so this isn't good.
Yeah.
This is a bad thing that's happening. Oh, okay. Kind of like when I watch Suits, when they do their their legal spiel back and forth.
Oh,
and
that
they,
must have been bad.
Oh, Harvey's yelling. That's not good. No, they screwed up there. But when he has his scotch and he puts on his vinyl record, I'm like, oh, it was a good day.
This is the only show where we will compare Suits to Star Wars. Let me know where you have that somewhere else, people. So, next up, Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
This is exciting.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
It's going to be exciting.
Do you think it's going to be good? Or do you think it's a lot of hype?
I have high expectations. And I'm excited about it.
Okay.
That's
all you can say. There's nothing else really to go by.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. We're going to take a hiatus. And we are going to let some time go by before we do a review of The Force Awakens. Because I think it's only... you can get an initial reaction and it could be either extremely good or extremely bad. But sometimes you need something with this much weight and anticipation. You need some time to go by to let it sink in and to really know how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
So we're probably going to watch it a couple times. We're going to go on our mid-season hiatus. And when we come back, we are going to talk about The Force Awakens and give you our goods on it and spoil the heck out of it. So everyone, go watch it. You've got time to do it. And we will return back with you in about a month. And we'll get right into The Force Awakens. Sound good, Daph J?
Sounds excellent.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been a lot of fun to go over these movies together and to talk about them and reminisce on all the things we love. You can reach out to us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com or caveofsolitude.com. Leave us an iTunes review. Tell us what you think, why you love the show. Don't leave an iTunes review and hate us because it's not going to help. If you want to hate on us, you can send me an email and I will possibly even read how much you hate us on the air. But that's we much rather prefer the positive feedback. So thank you again, everybody, for listening. I'm Eric Anthony.
I'm Daphne J.
May the Force be with you. I think I gotta watch these movies again. It's a trap. It's a trap.